Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everyone, and welcome into Taking You to School, formerly the only college basketball show on the RF Sports Radio Network. Now we're obviously talking NBA and a little NBA draft and, you know, kind of how those players are going to develop a little bit. I'm your host, Joe Varello of SweetSports.com. That's S-U-I-T-E Sports.com. Joining me, as always, my colleague from SweetSports.com. He's also contributed to the ESPN True Hoop Network at sites like Knickerblogger, also contributed at BuzzFeed, Mr. Jeremy Conlin. Jeremy, how are you finishing out your weekend, this particular weekend?
It's been both relaxing and hectic at the same time, so it's been a bit confusing, but I'm doing good.
Relaxing and hectic at the same time. All right, fair enough. Well, hopefully this will be a relaxing but somewhat enjoyably hectic edition of Taking You to School. Got a couple things to talk about, and obviously we're kind of in a little bit of a dead period on the basketball calendar. No summer league going on. We're still a ways away from the beginning of the season. There have been some off-season moves, but they're kind of in the rear view. The big ones, at least, are kind of in the rear view mirror right now. But two re-signings we want to start off with here, and one is Nikola Pekovic, re-upping with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He got 5 years and $60 million. And Larry Sanders, also a center, re-upping with the Milwaukee Bucks for 4 years and $44 million. Obviously, pretty decent re-signings here. Two pretty significant players, both with their pros and cons. I want to start with kind of the thing that stood out to me, Jeremy, we were just discussing off here, was the number of years on these contracts. Sanders, what, 3 years, maybe 3.5 years younger than Pekovic, probably a little bit of a better athlete. And Pekovic kind of maybe not a liability defensively, but not a very good defender. And playing next to a guy like Kevin Love, who's a really, really good offensive player, but not a great defensive player either. So what do you think the thinking was behind, first of all, the Timberwolves bringing him back, but also giving him that five-year deal, that extra year on the contract?
I mean, that's definitely the interesting part of it. And the way Minnesota has arranged their cap makes it even more curious. Under the new CBA that went into effect after the lockout, you can only designate one player for the 5 year max contract. Mm-hmm. That's what Derrick Rose got from Chicago, and mm-hmm. And that's the reason why Oklahoma City couldn't give James Harden the contract he wanted, because they had already designated Russell Westbrook for that 5 year max. And what Minnesota did when they re-signed Kevin Love is they only gave him 4 years at the max because they wanted to keep that 5 year max deal open, presumably mm-hmm. for Ricky Rubio. And now what happened is the Pekovic contract, it's not an official max deal because it's $60 million and the other $8 million is incentive. Mm-hmm. But the question, this is the one thing that I don't know the answer to, and I wish I had, is if he meets all of those incentives, does that become their designated contract?
Yeah.
Does that mean they can't give Rubio that 5 year max that they would probably want to? So that's the most curious thing about it, is that, I mean, the Sanders contract is actually really good. I really like that value. It's 4 years, $44 million, I think. I mean, and that's the same price that JaVale McGee got from Denver when he re-signed with them. So if you compare McGee to Sanders, like, Sanders is a much better player. Just because he gives you the same thing on offense, but he's also a real impact defensive player. So, you know, to compare and contrast, I would much rather have Sanders at $44 million over 4 years than Pekovic for potentially $68 million over 5 years. So, the fifth year on the Pekovic one is really the one that throws it for a loop, considering, like you said, he's older than Sanders is, and there wasn't much of a market for him outside of Minnesota. So it was curious why they gave him the fifth year. But from their perspective, maybe it's just we're trying to keep Kevin Love happy, so we're going to bring Pekovic back for whatever it takes. That could have been their thinking. But to me, the fifth year seemed superfluous, and I would have saved that money for someone else. But, you know, all things considered, they were both smart moves. You can sort of quibble over the price for Pekovic, but all in all, I would definitely think bringing both of them back was the right thing for each of those teams.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sanders being a young guy, an impact defensive player, a pretty good rebounder. You look at the Bucks have kind of undergone a pretty major facelift this offseason. Moving forward, what are Milwaukee's prospects for not only this next year, but as they they're kind of trying to get out of this middle of the East rut. You know, what can we look for the Bucks to do in the next maybe year or so?
Well, I think, you know, ditching Monte Ellis and Brandon Jennings in the long term will probably turn out to be better for them, just because it didn't seem like those two guys fit in with what they were trying to do. It definitely seems like Sanders is going to be the piece that they're going to build around, and he really seems to be the only guy that, or I guess Ersan Ilyasova as well, but those are really the only two guys that they really seem committed to long term. And those are probably like the third and fourth best guys on a championship level team.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're definitely trying to, if not bottom out, then, you know, at least get into the lottery. So maybe they can get like a Paul George type player that you can get at the end of the lottery that sort of turns your team around right away. You know, if they can get that sort of central, you know, Paul George isn't quite a central star, but at least someone of his caliber that, someone at the end of the lottery that can help them out long term. Like, they definitely need a creative offensive player to maximize the offensive talent that Sanders and Ilyasova have. But I mean, in the short term, it definitely seems like they're sort of, you know, the glean has come off the idea of just getting into the playoffs and selling playoff tickets. I think they're sort of past that now. It seems like they're much more content to be in the lottery, and even if they're not straight out tanking like maybe Philadelphia is, they're not too concerned about making the playoffs this season.
Yeah, fair enough. And like you said, that has been a bit of a change for them from years past, and definitely taking a little bit more of a long term view on things. Getting back to Pekovic, one of our, I guess, contributors, you tell him, we'll call him a contributor, Bennett Corcoran, he wrote a piece that he thought, you know, Minnesota overpaid for him a little bit. Like you mentioned earlier, Bennett kind of agreed with that there wasn't really a market for him outside of Minnesota, and he just didn't understand why Minnesota, you know, would fork over that extra year and a little extra cash and throw some incentives in when there weren't really any other buyers. It just didn't really make economic sense, and I think that does kind of make sense. But my question to you, purely from a basketball standpoint, outside of just keeping Kevin Love happy, how does this help Minnesota move forward? Bennett mentioned that, you know, he's not a great defensive player. They really need a guy that can kind of, you know, alter shots and change things on the interior. Is that a fair critique of him? And with him and Kevin Love playing next to each other, can the Timberwolves, you know, with some other pieces, kind of take the next step?
It's definitely an interesting question. Like, if purely in a vacuum, I would say Pekovic is worth the contract without the incentives. I mean, $60 million for 5 years, $12 million a season on average. That's a good price for someone that, you know, over the last two seasons, he's basically been a double-double guy per 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's averaged 18 points and 10 rebounds. And he scores really efficiently because he gets a lot of offensive rebounds and he draws a lot of fouls. So, like, he only shoots around 53%, which doesn't seem to really jump off the page. But when you include his free throw shooting and the rate at which he draws fouls, he becomes a lot more efficient scorer. His player efficiency rating over the last 2 years, it's been over 20 both years. So in terms of just his value to a basketball team, that seems like a fair price. But, you know, like you said, like Bennett said on the website, he's not a good defensive player, and putting him next to Kevin Love is going to create some problems defensively, especially when Kevin Martin is on the floor, their new signing, because he might actually be the worst defensive player in the entire league. He cannot guard anybody. So putting all three of them on the floor at the same time is going to be a real issue for them. They won't be able to get stops. But if you think about the other side of the floor, Love is a phenomenal offensive player. Ricky Rubio he's still developing, but he's already a very dynamic, creative player. Martin is a great shooter, and even, like, you know, he sort of lost some athleticism, but he still has the ability to get into the paint and draw fouls in ways that, he doesn't seem like he would be a dynamic offensive player, but he can score in a variety of ways that a lot of people don't give him credit for. And Petkovic is really rough and burly on the inside, and he actually might be a better offensive rebounder than Kevin Love is. So those four players, and if they can fit another shooter around them, that they're going to have a really, really good offensive team. You know, not quite as good as Oklahoma City or San Antonio or Miami or the Clippers, like not on that level, but definitely mm-hmm. that second tier of really great offensive teams. So just having an offense that good is going to keep them in games. And the West is going to be super competitive this year with all these other teams that have made big moves. Yeah. But I definitely think that they're a strong candidate for the bottom half of that conference, you know, the 6, 7, 8 that seems to be open after the top five. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be competing with, you know, New Orleans and, you know, trying to think of who else is getting, you know, so the top five is going to be San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Houston, Memphis, and the Clippers. But then after that, it's pretty wide open because Denver has definitely taken a step back. Golden State is going to be in the mix, I suppose. But, you know, other than that, like Portland, maybe Utah, probably not. The Lakers don't seem to be a playoff team this year. So Minnesota definitely, you know, has put themselves in a position where they can be, you know, the 6, 7, 8 seed possibly. And it's like the bottom half of that conference really seems to be struggling. So in terms of them going forward, they seem to be a playoff team. So maybe that was, mm-hmm. if that's their goal, then it seems like they're on the right track for that.
Yeah, fair enough. And you mentioned a couple teams that we will touch on later. You talked about the Lakers not quite looking like a playoff team. We'll get to Kobe Bryant and the Los Angeles Lakers a little bit later. But I want to move over to the Eastern Conference. And, you know, we both live in Boston, so I feel like we have to discuss the Celtics whenever we get the chance. And they just traded away Fab Melo, one of their when they had a pair of first-round draft picks a couple of years ago. They used him on him and Jared Sullinger. And Fab Melo always kind of considered a little bit of a project of a pick. And I guess the project is done now. He toiled in the D-League for a while, although he actually played pretty well in the D-League, but, you know, that's not the NBA. They trade him away for Dante Green, who's an expiring contract. Looks like they're probably going to cut him to get below the luxury tax line. But with Fab Melo gone now, you look at the Celtics. Since the Big Three came together in 2007, they only have three guys left on that roster that they've actually drafted. And one of them was Jeff Green, who they drafted for Seattle, which became Oklahoma City. He eventually came back into town. So of guys that they drafted that never left and have just been on the team since 2007, all they've got left is Avery Bradley, who's obviously a pretty good player, and Jared Sullinger, a bench player that's, you know, still developing and finding his role. And obviously, well, I'm not counting Olynyk, this year's draft picks. So looking at now that Fab Melo has gone out of the scene with the Celtics, you know, they're obviously in pretty full rebuild mode now with Brad Stevens, the new coach. How bad has this drafting been, and can they kind of rebuild now that they're hoping to rebuild around Rondo, Bradley, and Green? Is that a realistic possibility, or does this team have to bottom out and get worse before it gets better right now?
Well, I mean, the drafting thing I wouldn't be that concerned about, just because it seems like all of those picks have been like 18 or later.
Yeah.
And at that point, for most teams, it's just a crapshoot. It's very rare that you see a consistent record of nailing picks after the lottery. I mean, like, Houston has done a really good job finding value in the second round. They got Chase Buttinger in the second round, and then Chandler Parsons in the second round. And San Antonio has been pretty good with the draft. But outside of those two teams, it's pretty rare that you see, you know, successful playoff teams consistently finding value with their picks in the 20s. It's really just whoever seems to roll, you know, double sixes whenever they're on the clock. So that I wouldn't be too concerned about. In terms of where they're going forward, you know, this season is obviously going to be tough for them, just because even if Rondo was healthy, I'm not sure that they're a playoff team. They have a lot of new pieces that they're going to try to integrate, the new coach, obviously. And, you know, they, in the press, obviously they're going to say, we're not tanking the season. Like, you can't come out and say that.
Yeah.
But the impression definitely seems to be that they're not concerned with being a competitive team this year. And that's probably for the best. Like, you know, we say it pretty much every single week on the show. Like, next year's draft is going to be loaded. There's, you know, 10 or 12 guys that seem like they have all-star potential. So, you know, with Olynyk on board, he seems to be a good offensive center. Jared Sullinger was actually pretty productive before he hurt his back, but that was the reason he fell so far in the draft, was because he had back issues. So, you know, if you're going to look glass half full, you can say, you know, this season they're not going to do very well because Rondo's hurt and, you know, all these other young pieces are still not totally fitting. But they might luck out in the draft and get a franchise-caliber player, and they could be right back in the middle of the playoff race next season. But, you know, it's really going to depend on how much these young guys can develop. Bradley is a really good defensive player, but he doesn't have much of an offensive ceiling. If he can't make threes, he's not really playable on offense at all, which is worrisome. Olynyk is, like I said, I think he's going to be a good offensive player, but he has really short arms, like hilariously short arms for how tall he is. I think he's 7 feet tall with 6'9" arms or something like that. So that really limits his defensive ceiling. In the same way that Blake Griffin will probably never be a great defensive player just because he doesn't have the length to be. But, you know, if they can, you know, do at least better than average on all these young guys and then sort of nail their pick in the upcoming draft, they, you know, as soon as 2015, they could be right back to being a 50-win team.
That's a lot of things that have to fall right for them. But, yeah, like you mentioned, next year's draft, there is that next great Celtic, that next franchise player in that draft. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see what Brad Stevens does. Obviously, he was great at developing high schoolers into, you know, unheralded high schoolers into good college players. We'll see what he can do with, you know, a roster of not so highly thought of players, see if he can, you know, if that translates well to him developing them into solid NBA players. Last thing I want to touch on, we talked the Celtics, maybe the only team in the NBA with more history and a more glorious franchise than the Celtics, also falling on a bit of hard times right now are the Los Angeles Lakers. Obviously, last year they came in with just a ton of expectations, bringing in Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. And, you know, there was talks about them overtaking the Heat as the next super team, and it looked for a while like they weren't even going to make the playoffs. Injuries all over the place. And they did get in, but, of course, Kobe Bryant with the Achilles injury towards the end of the year, so he's still coming back from that. ESPN released a power poll where they had the Lakers listed as the 12th best team in the West. And judging from what we know, you know, I don't think many people can disagree with them missing the playoffs. But Kobe Bryant, he took a little offense to that, disagreed with it publicly on Twitter. I think a lot of people were, you know, basically talking about the fact that they're ranked below the Pelicans and things like that, although the Pelicans have some intriguing young pieces. But let's talk about Kobe Bryant here. He's 35 now. He's coming off a ruptured Achilles. Pretty tough injury to come back from quickly. And a lot of time guys, you know, guys that try to come back from it too quickly lose a little bit of explosiveness, at least for that first year back. Is this kind of the beginning of the end Kobe Bryant era out in L.A.? And, you know, we'll get to his legacy in a bit, but basically what does a Kobe Bryant – is there another good run in a Kobe Bryant-run Lakers team at this point?
So to go with the Achilles injury, the obvious parallel would be Chauncey Billups in that he had – in 2011, he played for Denver and the Knicks. He was part of the Melo trade. And he actually had a really good season between the two teams. And then 2012, he ruptured his Achilles. And then this past season, he played 418 minutes over 22 games. And he's basically the same age. He was 34 in 2011. He was 35 when he ruptured his Achilles. And he was 36 this past season. And he's basically out of the league at this point. He's going to be you know, the 13th man for Detroit. He's not going to be a major contributor for them. So with Kobe, he obviously has this Herculean work ethic that on some level will make you think that he can just come back from this and be completely normal. But, you know, just the natural aging process seems to disagree with that. So for him, like, my guess is that he's going to try to come back at some point this season, and he's going to come back probably sooner than people think he should. And that's going to make a really interesting scenario, because this is the last season of his contract, and he has said publicly that he wants the full max regardless of whether how well he plays this coming season.
Yeah.
He said he does not want to take a pay cut. So if he comes back and doesn't play well, it's going to be really interesting to see what the Lakers do with him if he stands by those demands that he wants the full max, which is going to be like $33 million. It's more than half the cap. And that will completely prohibit the Lakers from signing another max contract. That's the thing that's going to be really interesting, because if they want to set themselves up for the summer of 2014, when Carmelo can be a free agent, LeBron can be a free agent, Chris Bosh can be a free agent. If they want to set themselves up to sign a free agent, they need to convince Kobe to take less than the max. And maybe the thing that gets him to do that is him struggling to come back from this injury. Maybe that it might be in their, you know, their short-term poor interest, because, you know, they're probably going to miss the playoffs if he can't play well. But long-term, maybe it helps him come back better long-term from the injury if he sits out the entire season or close to that. And maybe him sitting out that entire season will get him to only take, you know, half of what he's expecting, which is still $15 million. It's still a lot. But that would open up another max contract slot that they could maybe go get Carmelo or LeBron if they decide to leave their current situation. So, I mean, that's going to be the interesting story to me, is how well Kobe comes back from this injury, not just to see how he plays exactly when he comes back, but how that's going to change the Lakers' future for 2015, for 2016, for whatever. And, you know, he said he wants to play until he breaks all of Kareem's scoring records and whatnot. So it really seems like he's going to be committed to coming back soon so that he doesn't, you know, lose any time to, you know, to not being able to score 38,000, however many points. So it's going to be on him to sort of judge whether he cares more about breaking those records or whether he cares about setting his team up for 2-3 years in the future.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. And another thing I wanted to kind of touch on with Kobe Bryant, and I'm going to ask you in just a second, is with the way this all shakes out, it's going to be an interesting end to the what has been a great, great career and in obviously one of the bright eras of a franchise with so many different golden eras. You know, Kobe Bryant winning, you know, championships with different kinds of teams, different sporting casts. Obviously, the Kobe and Shaq teams were pretty darn dominant in the early 2000s. Knowing what we know, what do you think the end game of this all is? But, you know, not talking specifics on money or anything like that, but do you think Kobe ends his career as a Laker? And where would you kind of put him, you know, right now? And let's project modestly into the future. We're not going to say he comes back and have 30 a game or anything. But where would you project him amongst the all-time Lakers, and does he finish his career as a Los Angeles Laker?
I think it would be very surprising for him to play for a team that's not the Lakers. I definitely think that he has that in his mind that he doesn't want that to happen. So if I was going to predict, I would predict the following. There are three scenarios that I see. One, he comes back, plays well enough that they just decide to fork over the full max because they don't want to lose him under any circumstances. Even if that means they can't sign another max player. I think that's scenario one. Scenario two is he comes back, plays absolutely terribly, and, you know, they sort of strong-arm him into taking technically a max contract in that he's going to be making $15 million a season, but it's not the maximum that he could be making under the salary cap. He could make 33-something. And then scenario three is he comes back, he's terrible to the point that he just quits. He retires at the end of the season because he can't sustain a level of play that he's accustomed to. And it's almost like that, you know, Isaiah Thomas did the same thing. he got hurt and then realized he was never going to be the same player again. So instead of dragging his career and, you know, having it be kind of awkward in the way that Gary Payton was just sort of in the league in 2007 being a bench player, Isaiah Thomas just up and retired after he got hurt, and I think Kobe could do that. I think the most likely scenario is scenario two, where it works out well for both sides and that Kobe can still play for the Lakers, but they don't have to pay him through the nose. I think that's the most likely scenario. And, you know, as a basketball fan, that's what you want to see. You want to see Kobe continue to play for as long as he can. You know, in terms of ranking him in the pantheon of Lakers and just players in general, Kobe's a really interesting case because it comes down to whether you value longevity or peak. And if you're just valuing longevity, Kobe might be one of the five best players ever because he's played for so long. But me personally, I value guys that peak higher. And, you know, that's why I would take Dwayne Wade over Kobe, because Wade at his best was better than Kobe at his best. So, you know, there's a huge gap between the two because, you know, like I said, he might be one of the five greatest players of all time in terms of total body of work. You know, it's really him and Kareem and Jordan, and, you know, Karl Malone might even fit into that conversation. But if you're going just by players who peaked the highest, you know, you could probably name 15 or maybe even 20 guys that, you know, even if they didn't have the longevity, they peaked higher, like Dwayne Wade. Bill Walton was not great for very long, but he was great for a short time. Even guys like Kevin Durant, if their careers aren't over, you know, Durant this past season was probably better than Kobe's ever been in his entire career. But because Durant isn't this long-tenured star, like he's been in the league for 6 years now, but, you know, Kobe's been in for 18, so obviously Kobe has this cachet that puts him above on another level. But, I mean, Durant's season this past season was as good or better than anything Kobe did. So, I mean, for me, that who values peak, there are plenty of guys that I would take over Kobe just in terms of a sustained level of play over, like, a 3 or 4 year window. So, you know, I would probably rank him between 15 and 20. That's probably my – I don't have a list in front of me that I've typed out, but I would probably put him between 15 and 20, probably on a level similar to, you know, Julius Irving and, you know, maybe Isaiah Thomas, although Thomas is probably lower. Dwayne Wade would probably be in that mix also. But that's the – to me, that's the most interesting debate in terms of historical legacy, where to place Kobe, just because there's so many different ways that argument can go.
Yeah, most definitely. And a lot of people, the people that really love Kobe get like super duper offended and defensive if you suggest that he isn't one of the top 5 or 10 greatest players of all time, but certainly putting him, you know, in the same category as a Dr. J is far from an insult. And like you said, Dwayne Wade, when he was at his best, was, oof. I mean, people think right now, just, you know, you look at the Heat, Dwayne Wade's obviously still a really, really good player, but that's LeBron's team now. But when Dwayne Wade was at his best, boy, was he something to watch. Anyways, that's all the time we've got for you this week's edition of Taking You to School. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody, and we'll catch you next Sunday.